אז בואו נבדוק מי חושב, חושבת שיש להן אולי שאלה. Nishtadel, we have to try and be really focused. Brief. All right, challenge. Not me, not mine. Again, love. אני אחזור על השאלה. Repeat the question. ככה, כמה עם כל תרגול בעצם, כן, יש איזו חוויה שלפעמים יש, נגיד, התחלה עם עוגן של נשימה, ואז באופן שמרגיש די טבעי, זה נפתח גם לצלילים, גם אולי לתחושות גוף, גם לדברים אחרים, וזה מרגיש מיטיב בגלל שזה מרווח ופותח. כן? אז ככה, עד כמה צריך להישאר עם עוגן אחד, או האם אפשר ככה להיות עם עוגן יותר פתוח, עם יותר מגוון של עוגנים. זו שאלה שהיא אמורה להיות לתשובה פשוטה, אבל אין לה, לפחות לא בשבילי, כן, זה נורא מעניין, כאילו, יכול להיות שמורות שונות יענו בדרך שונה. ואני אתייחס ככה משני כיוונים. לא, אני אתייחס מכיוון אחד. הדבר המשמעותי, בטח בשלב הזה של ריטריט, כאילו בשלב הזה, שאנחנו כבר בתרגול הרבה מאוד זמן, זה להרגיש מה מיטיב, כן? ומה מיטיב מהבחינה שאם אני, אם התודעה נפתחת יותר למשהו שנקרא, אפשר לקרוא לו, יש דרך תרגול כזאת של מודעות פתוחה, כן? שאומרת, מה שעולה, כן? זה העוגן, כן? התחושות או הצלילים, וכשהתודעה מאוד אסופה, זה יכול להיות גם המחשבות, כן? הכל אז יכול להיות כיוון תרגול כזה. בשלב הזה בריטריט הייתי אומרת שהדבר החשוב לשים לב זה מה זה עושה, האם זה באמת כמו שאמרת מרווח ובעצם עוזר לי להיות אסוף, כן? עוזר לי להיות נוכח עם התרגול, או שזה פשוט תנועה של חוסר שקט, וכרגע אני חושבת לרובנו נוכל להרגיש את ההבדל, כן? בין משהו שהוא חסר שקט לבין משהו שהוא פתוח ומרווח ואז התנאים. העוגן עולה, כן, ויש משהו יותר פתוח. כן? ואז, ואני אולי כן אגיד מעוד זווית אחת, שיש גם לפעמים דברים אינדיבידואליים, שמענו את זה גם פה באולם, כאילו דרכי תרגול אישיות שעובדות לי, ואם אנחנו לא בטוחים בטוחות, זה מקום טוב לדבר עם מישהו, מורה מורה, כדי לבדוק, כן, מה באמת קורה שם, ולראות. אבל ככה זה משהו יותר כללי שאני אגיד על הדבר הזה, במקרה הזה נשמע לי שככה אתה יודע ואפשר להרגיש. ויכול להיות שהתהליך הזה שקרה, אמרתי שנקצר ואני לא מצליחה, התהליך הזה שקרה, לא אני, לא שלי, לא עצמי, התהליך הזה שקרה של להתחיל מעוגן אחד ואז זה עוזר לאיזשהו איסוף ואז הקשב שאומר עכשיו זה נפתח ואני הולך עם זה. כן, זה יכול להיות שיש שם משהו שככה להרהר בו ולראות האם זה משהו שמיטיב לעשות אותו ככה. בשמחה. אוקיי. כן, אנחנו, we're going to try to go with people who haven't asked yet, so, but please keep raising your hands. Want you?
Mm-hmm. So the question was why are you avoiding dealing with emotions here? And that we haven't even said the word emotions or, you know, its equivalent. Is it okay, the volume? Yeah. So we haven't said a lot about thoughts or emotions, as far as I can tell. And there's kind of an initial reason why we don't, which is that they're quite complex things to kind of pay attention to. And even in this kind of longer retreat, there may only be a few of us who can really sustain the steadiness of attention, not to actually get fully kind of pulled into those patterns. So that's kind of like one reason why we might avoid it. The other is that, you know, we're going to experience a lot of those things anyway. And hopefully what we'll see is, in this exploration, what happens to thoughts and emotions when we respond to them in the kinds of ways that we've been suggesting. So hopefully that feels like a healthy and helpful way of experiencing those things. But yeah, we could talk about it more. So there's kind of like two sides to this. One is like what these So the if I get it right, like there's this feeling that if we don't talk about it, we don't bring them in, and then we're actually just practicing, well, you know, they're also a Nietzsche. They're also not who I really am, they're not me, they're not mine. They don't define me, they don't, you know, and then they tend to fade. Right, so a lot of these practices that we're doing, they actually allow or support the fading of these experiences. And yet there kind of feels that, well, it's a really significant part of the human life experience, right? That I have emotions, that I have feelings, that... and then these ways of looking at experience actually seem to diminish that view. Because if you actually... seems like what you're actually saying is this way of looking at the emotions actually causes the emotions to disappear. And if the emotion's not being felt, that feels significant. It's like, well, something's not being respected. If I get it correctly. Yeah. And so the emotions have this feeling that they exist from their own side. They come with their message. They should be met and seen, respected, all this kind of thing. And that if we don't hold them as real things... and we're not holding anything as a real thing. Even these teachings ultimately are not also a real thing. You know, we're just trying stuff out and we're seeing what happens when we change the conditions for that experience. So we could have this kind of big flame of whatever, positive or negative emotion, and open the space around that. It's like, it's not what it used to be. So there's this kind of question about the true nature of emotions as well. In there, which is a tricky thing to talk about, really.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just add that also, you know, it's not like, you know, I think we have been saying, and it's important to remember, you know, that it's not a, you know, these are ways of looking that are kind of coming to, I forgot the word.
Can you speak in Hebrew?
No, it's fine. They are cultivating a particular way of looking in order to reveal a particular thing, but it's not like this is the only way to deal with our experience. And, you know, there's many ways, and different aspects of our experience need different responses. So, I would say, you know, really depends on what we're talking about, but sometimes, you know, certainly like a lot of our emotional life would benefit more potentially, or would benefit also from a relational arena or field, and not just from an internal one. So just to put that out there, it's not like this is an absolute, like, touches everything, includes everything. And these are meditation instructions. And yes, we're not going much into emotions. We have touched a little bit into moods, mind states, which are kind of come with, but are not precisely that. And I would say personally, I would also like hesitate to give a meditation instruction to this larger group of people that says, look at your emotion as not me, not mine. Yeah. It's like, yeah. I wouldn't give it as a meditation instruction for such a large group of people who are experiencing so many different things, because partly because of what you say could be really could be unhelpful as well as helpful. Okay, so maybe if we could have all the hands again, so we get a sense. Yes, Eli Machora. As any chzor b'ktara, maybe I'll try and I'll repeat in English, so you understand also. It's a continuation question from the previous question, saying, you know, that there are also meditative tools, or it's the kind there are there also meditative tools to work with things like emotions, and what are the possibilities of bringing those in, as well as this kind of more three characteristic ways of looking to work with our emotional life. I'll answer in Hebrew. Is that okay? Yeah. As אני חושבת שחלק מה כי שוב הייתי מאוד מעדיפה בדברים האלה לדבר באופן אישי. אני חושבת שחלק מהכלים האלה כן נוכחים מאוד, כן, עבודה עם המטה היא דרך לעשות מרחב לרגשות וגם לבוא במגע איתם. עבודה עם עם הנשימה הארוכה, הנעימות, ההתרככות, ההתרווחות היא דרך לבוא במגע איתם. וגם שלושת דרכי ההסתכלות הם דברים שאפשר להביא לעבודה עם רגשות. אתה אתה שואל האם יש, או אתה שואל מה זה? מה יהיה? אוקיי. אוקיי, הבנתי אותך. שוב, זה מאוד מאוד אישי. אני אתן דוגמה. I'll repeat it. It was a clarification of the question because I hadn't understood it precisely enough. Of like, is the value in bringing into the meditative space, into our meditation practice, particular issues or patterns or narratives even that are coming up, and instead of just putting them to one side and say coming back to the object of the practice, to actually focus on them during the meditation. כן, יכול להיות לזה ערך, זה, זה, זה שוב, זה מאוד מאוד ספציפי, זה גם מאוד תלוי בתרגול שלנו, בכוונה שלנו, במה אנחנו מפתחים באותו זמן, ובמה קורה בחיים שלנו. אז אני אתן דוגמה, כן, לעבוד עם, לפעמים הקול של המבקר העצמי, בדיוק נעשה את זה בצורה הזאת, כן? אם עולה הרבה ביקורת עצמי, שהיא קשורה גם לרגש, גם לפסיכולוגיה, גם ל... אז אפשר להביא אותה למודעות ולהחזיק אותה שם ו... לחקור אותה קצת יותר, להביא את החלק של החקירה. מקווה שזה עונה. תודה. Someone behind the pillar, I can't see. מישהו מאחורי העמוד שמצביע? עודד, כן, בבקשה.
Okay, so I'll repeat and then you can just let me know if I get it right, what you're saying. So using this Vedana practice to notice that, you know, the condition of what we're paying attention to, you know, can often lean towards the unpleasant Vedanas, and that kind of noticing that feels kind of helpful and kind of keeps things on a nice kind of level at times. But then there can become this unpleasant memory or thoughts and things, emotions that come through, yeah, and we get kind of pulled into this story and it kind of builds up and we're feeling the challenges of that. And is there like a tool or a technique that we can use in that experience that will kind of bring us back to the meditation kind of space that we're trying to cultivate? Okay, so interestingly, you can use Vedana at that point as well. Right, even though it feels like a complex kind of cluster of Vedanas that have come together, and they're kind of there's this and that and all this, and it might feel very complicated, the felt sense of having all of those clusters of thoughts and feelings and body sensations and things like that, we can just notice, oh, this is unpleasant, you know, and I can stay with that. It's unpleasant. I don't need to react to it, I don't need to run away from it, I don't need to escape from it. This is actually, I am now present, this is my experience, and it's felt as, it has an unpleasant feeling to it. Alternatively, or additionally, to kind of support ourselves, we can also begin to understand that this is also, has a correlation, it has a representation in the body space, which may be felt through the posture. It may be felt through the amount of space there is for the whole of the body here, or the amount of space there is for the awareness to be here, to feel that it's sensitive, that it's responsive in that way. Another way it's often represented is in the kind of the rhythm, the depth, the movement of the breathing. How much space of the body, the breathing, is being allowed to take up. Yeah, when there's a lot of tension, of feeling I should do something, or the emotion gets very constricted and tight, the breathing will change. And just as we were saying, it's not like you have to get rid of emotions, but what happens to that emotion if we start to kind of change and soften and allow the experience to be here? So those are the kind of things that I try for myself, is just noticing, oh, this is an unpleasant Vedana. And I might notice that because there's reactivity, or I might notice that because this feels unpleasant. And sometimes just noticing that's enough, and sometimes, you know, supporting the other ways in which this experience is coming into being. and moving it into a different direction, like short breath to a longer breath, tightness, invite to relax. Have you maybe already tried those and they didn't work, or yeah, okay, so I hope that's helpful.
Was that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see who we have. Well, we have a lot. Ayelet Shachar, at Sha'alt kvar Shela? Okay. It's like a memory game for me.
Yeah, you good? You good?
Okay, I'll translate. So, finding... So finding this practice very, very useful, very impactful, and noticing that there's kind of aspects of the experience or aspects of the self identity where it's more difficult to let go, to unhook, you know, both like just finding it more difficult, needing to kind of spend more time there for that to happen. And then feeling a sense, both sometimes there's like a bit of a sense of grief that comes of like, it's interesting to see, does that grief come before or after the letting go? I'm just adding that and I'll let you answer that in a moment. And sometimes there's also a fear of like, what would happen if I completely let go of the identification, the personality, and if everyone else did as well. Kind of what would happen to experience, what would happen to the world. Yeah, so I think a really beautiful exploration. I think, did I get all of it?
Hebrew?
Ah, nachon.
Maybe, yeah.
Hebrew? Adif bivrit?
Well,
Ken? Bivrit? Okay. As toda. אז ככה כמה דברים. אחד זה באמת, וזה היה נוכח בשאלה שלך ובאופן ששאלת, אבל אני הדגשתי מאוד את החשיבות של המטה והחמלה בתהליך, כן? אז מאוד לתת להם להיות בנוכחות שם, וגם הסבלנות, ככה ללכת בקצב שנכון. הראייה הזאת שיש את ה... כאילו, את רואה את היחזות ברזולוציות, בכל מיני רזולוציות, אנחנו רואות את זה, אבל אני לא רוצה לשחרר כאן. ואפשר להגיד בעצם, מצד אחד, אוקיי, לא חייבת, כן? או לא חייב, תלוי מה הקול הפנימי הזה, כן? לא חייב, לא חייבת, אבל בואו נראה מה קורה אם, כן? או כש, כן? בואו נראה מה קורה כש. ואז, כמו שאמרתי, מעניין לראות אם התחושה של האובדן באה לפני או אחרי, וכמה זמן אחרי, כן? איך היא ביחס לתחושה של ההקלה. וגם עם הפחד, חמלה, מטה, סבלנות, לזכור שזה בקצב שלנו, ולזכור שזה, ככה, מה, הדבר המשמעותי, מה אני לומדת, ולתת לה למידה להוביל, כן? ולהקלה, ולטוב להוביל, במקום להרגיש שאני צריכה, להגיע לאיזשהו מקום שבו הכל נשמט, או, לדחוף את עצמי, כאילו מעבר לקצב שמרגיש לי מיטיב, כן? ממש ככה לראות את החוויה של הלמידה, אבל לפעמים גם ההרהורים האלה הם יכולים להיות מיטיבים, כן? לשאול את שאלה, ומה יקרה, מה אם בעולם, אם כולנו נשמות בעולם? ואפשר לראות איך שמיטה חלקית של ההזדהות הזאת, כמה יכולה להיטיב, למשל במרחב של יחסים, כן? כשאפשר לפתוח, ואפשר לשחרר, ואפשר אפילו לדבר את הטריטוריה הזאת. להגיד, אני מרגישה שאני מחזיקה כאן משהו, להנכיח את זה, ושקשה לי. אז ככה, יש הרבה מרחב שם, אבל החשיבות של המטה, החמלה, סבלנות, והקצב הנכון והמיטיב, והצעה, במקום הדרישה מעצמנו לשחרר. וזה גם מתחבר לכמה זה משמעותי אז לשהות בהקלה, כי היא נותנת לנו ביטחון והיא מענה טוב גם לפחד, כי אני מפחיתה את הפחד לאורך זמן, ומאפשרת את השחרור היד הזאת ביותר ויותר תחומים ומובנים ומקומות. תודה. Yeah, I think I answered it.
Great question. You asked.
I asked a question. Okay. But I think it's okay. Okay. Chen?
Maybe it's the most gathering I had. Do I still need to kind of balance it with somebody practice?
Yeah. Maybe before we repeat an answer, I'll just say it's 11 o'clock. So just to let you all know, if anyone wants to leave, some people already have, then feel free to. I mean, you can always do it at any time, but yeah.
So there's two parts to the question about the anatta practice. The second part is easier to describe, which is it feels really good and it's giving this sense of samadhi is kind of coming from the practice. So should I still do another practice to support that samadhi? And the first thing that you were asking was more about like the specifics of doing this and the construction of the self. And what to pay attention to in that?
When you spoke about in the Dharma talk, you said like the interesting question is what does the self clean up?
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how the practice of saying not clean up self can bring that, but maybe kind of
having more of a reflection in the practice.
Great. So, is this the? Are we going to go into this aggregated thing?
You can if you
okay.
Would. Yeah.
Okay.
You have permission.
So first, let's get some samadhi. So this samadhi comes from insights, right? Samadhi leads to insights. I don't know if we've said much about this kind of reciprocal circle kinds of thing. People familiar with this type of sense, you know, you practice a lot of samadhi, a certain degree of clarity can come about in that slowing down, in that stillness. We can see it's like, oh, something is coming into being. We also then get to regard in a way how it comes into being, and that becomes an insight for us. So we can have personal insights at times of saying, oh, I get an understanding about how my experience comes into being. Then we can actually take from the teachings these kind of universal insights. Oh, everything that has appeared is inconstant. And when I pay attention to it that way, it develops and sustains a sense of samadhi. Yeah. Oh, I tend to take things as being about me or mine. And then that view leads into samadhi. But it might be a different kind of samadhi. We might want that whole of the samadhi that we actually get is just not so analytical, not so looking in a particular way, but actually thinking about nourishment, thinking about gathering, thinking about well-being. So if a samadhi kind of comes from the insight practice, just making sure that we're really whole body enjoying, really sensitive nourishment, drinking it in, letting it touch me, letting myself dissolve into this, you know, whatever really kind of deepens and nourishes that. And then we would say, that's the samadhi that's coming from the insight practice, right? So there's still a lot of samadhi going on, but the samadhi is particularly around this gathered and enjoying kind of quality. It might not matter quite so much precisely where it's coming from, but if we notice there's a certain samadhi base foundational practice that I do that touches bits that this insight practice isn't doing, maybe we do a bit more of that just to kind of fill it out, flesh it out, feel good. And then the insights maybe then go deeper. So like keeping on with that samadhi is quite an important priority. The second question, I just can't see how to be very brief about it, but basically the Buddha, Zohar mentioned this kind of question that this monk or whoever, you know, comes and asks the Buddha this question, is like, you know, how does this self-view identification come about? And then the further question, how does this self-view identification stop coming about? And he's saying, you know, well, there are, you know, beings who haven't heard about these kinds of teachings, and they tend to take the form, the body, you know, as something that belongs to you, or something that you belong to, or something that you're inside of, or something that you contain. And that ideas and conceptions of self around form are things that give a sense of self-view. You know, we have these Vedanas, they come up, they kind of refer a little bit to our, you know, I have these preferences, I like this thing and I don't like that thing. That's how you kind of know it's me who's come around, and I like that cup and not that cup, and this spoon and that one, you know, it's like, and I like to eat with a fork, not a spoon. I eat my salad with a spoon. I know other people don't, but that's me, you know, I have that kind of Vedana preference thing. We have a sense, I'm in that, that's in me, it's part of me, it's inseparable from me. That's how you know it's me. Those who have that view, self-view identification comes about. Those who don't hold that view, that's me, that says something clearly about me, hold that lightly and it dissolves. The other ones, the perceptions, how we label, how we see, what we think things are, what we think things aren't, how we conceive of the world, all that coming into being. Complex as anything thing to talk about, I'll speak more about it tonight. But that's also part of how we form subtler identity views when we've let go of the more gross ones. Our thoughts, feelings, intentions, attention, perceptions, all of that kind of come together, again, with the Vedanas as this sankhara, thought forms. You know, it's another part of how self-view identification comes about. And we can look, oh, I'm identifying with that stuff. Should I? Shouldn't I? Well, what if I don't? What happens? That's what this practice is. It's a not-self strategy. Maybe Zohar used that phrase already. We're not saying it is or it isn't. We're trying this on as a strategy to find out, what happens when I don't identify? What if I don't even identify with awareness, with being conscious? Yeah, don't even think that, oh, that's who I must be. All this other stuff comes and goes, but awareness is always there. And we don't even take that view. Not because we understand that we shouldn't, because it analytically doesn't make sense. Just trying it on. Like you might try on someone else's cloak and say, oh, I feel like this in this. You try on this teaching and say, oh, that feels weird. That feels different. So it depends. Ah, it depends. And so we can try it through that thing. That's the ways in which self-view identification tends to come about. It's not a definition of who you really are, but it's a practice framework to explore the fullness of that teaching. I think that's about as short as I can make it.
Did that make sense? Yeah, great. Yeah, so good. And you guys also have a one-to-one today. You can talk about it more.
Only if you want to.
Okay, well, we have a lot more questions. Well, yeah, I mean, Yarden and Aviv have been wanting to ask a question for a long time, so maybe we'll start with them, and we really need to be quick.
Okay. Ask Yarden. Easy questions, please.
Yeah.
Only in terms of the
But I want to understand your take on it in terms of how maybe seeing the emptiness also kind of amplifies my metta and vice versa. Like, again, arguably, it's kind of, you know, it throws apart for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like, you see the emptiness kind of pushes me away from the feelings of metta.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd like to understand how it
works. Okay. Are you going to touch on it tonight? Yeah, so the question is around the relationship between metta and emptiness. It feels like it's kind of been in the whispers around, but it hasn't been explicitly touched on yet in the retreat. And we are going to address it in the next 2 days. So it will come up in the talks tonight and tomorrow. And I would just respond to one thing that you also said that I haven't said it, which is also sometimes feeling like the not seeing the relationship is even in the sense of when I practice more emptiness, it doesn't feel like it leads to more metta. That's kind of just interesting to notice. Have you still got a one-to-one today? Okay, so let's talk about it then, if that's okay for you, because it's a personal inquiry to you know, it's great that you're noticing it. I would say it here. It's great that we notice that, and then personal, not as like only you feel this, but at the exploration. Yeah, it would take, like, there isn't just a it wouldn't be helpful to just answer generally if we have the opportunity to talk about it in person. But it's definitely not just you. That would be my take, unless you have a one sentence response. And in the meantime, it's a great topic. Yeah, and we will be unfolding it, like I said in the talks. Really important question.
I suppose the one thing that might be helpful in the meantime is we sometimes think emptiness is like a thing that happens or a place that it is. It's more a quality that things are not fixed any particular way, which can invite a sense of why not send loving kindness to this thing? Does it not deserve loving kindness? And I just didn't think about that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if I add metta to something, is it then the same?
And how does it change my experience? Like, also, that's also interesting to see.
So bringing in metta proves it was empty all along. It wasn't fixed that one way. Metta's changed it, changed me. Otherwise, don't do metta if it's not changing anything. And if it is changing anything, it's proving that it's empty.
So actually, it connects a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the anatta, it's like I'm kind of like I'm checking out with my body, with my emotions, with my consciousness, and then, but this is not me, this is nothing. So how do I like checking it out? And the second is about healthy boundaries, like how I feel that the more that I understand my boundaries, and now I touch this body, because this is in this physical realm, what I demonstrate, the more I can be more intimate and connect and have healthy relationships with things.
Mm-hmm.
So one, that, second.
Great, excellent. So yeah, a two-part question, which somehow I will answer incredibly briefly. Awesome. So the first part is, if I get it right, that we are looking at, in a sense, how experience comes into being, you know, and all of these kinds of things. And we're emphasizing this, you know, feel how it feels for you. And then everything that I'm looking at is not a thing in itself. So how am I feeling how these things are? Because I kind of, if you don't identify with things, then they don't actually hang around in the way that they used to and this kind of thing. But there's still like a subtle sense. It's like, oh, that feels freer, you know? And so it's that kind of sense of freedom that we're looking for. It's that sense of well-being. It's that sense of peace that actually feels like, it's not a peace like, oh, thank goodness that stopped. It's more like a release. And looking for that quality of release is the thing that kind of guides us, as a sense that dukkha is an absence of freedom.
And so I can feel what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 It's like, oh, that's getting tight. So that's maybe not the right practice right now. Mm-hmm. So this second part of the question around boundaries. Yeah, boundaries are really important for us as social, integrated, living entities that interact with other social interacting entities, and that can include things we think of as beings and things that, you know, kind of come as other experiences, and we're in this kind of relational field. To have a relational field, we need to have a sense of a boundary, right? Because this is over here relating to over there. Doesn't necessarily stand up to meditative inquiry, right? But as social interacting beings, we can hold that view. I'm responsible for what happens over here. Yeah? Thoughts come to me, things come to me, intentions come to me, and I bring them into being. Is there really a free will or not? Who knows? But it feels like there is, and for as long as there feels like there is, let's pick and choose carefully and skillfully so that we retain a sense of apparent autonomy, you know, and relational quality. And so, yeah, finding where that boundary is for us probably won't be fixed for all time and for all relationships. And that's what's good about certain relationships is that the boundaries are clear. And what's good about certain relationships, the boundaries are fluid. So finding what works again for you in that field. I hope that's kind of a helpful thing, is recognizing that boundaries are empty, which means we can play with them. Yeah.
Mm. You do need some kind of sense of self to play again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's
yeah. Yeah. It's not about annihilating. It's not about killing off the self. Yeah. We're not trying to get rid of it. Yeah. We're interested in understanding it and working skillfully with that. Yeah. That's the. Yeah. And I would say also a sense of responsibility. Just to add one sentence to Nathan, we have a responsibility. Just like we realize this isn't just my body, yet I have a responsibility to look after it. Yeah, it's part of nature, but it's my responsibility. Yeah, so we kind of have that sense, and it actually can really open up possibilities. Okay, we had two questions here. Johnny, you had a question before as well, right?
It's not mine.
Okay.
Okay, it's not yours. Great. Okay, I'm going to start with you because you have a one-to-one also today, and you already had yours, didn't you? So I'm just going to start with you.
The question, you're getting into my question now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, who or what is meditating? That's the question.
Yeah. So I'm actually also going to touch on this in the talk tonight, I hope. And if it's not clear by the end of the talk, please do let me know.
Yeah.
Talk about it tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning. Yeah. Hopefully by then it'll be absolutely clear who is or is not meditating.
Great.
Lovely question.
Yeah, Elva Vakasha. Okay. Yeah, the language. So I'll repeat it in Hebrew because it was in Hebrew. Ma'evdel ben sdeto da alis demu da'ut.
What does it mean, sir?
Like, it's how it's about how I'm using the words in Hebrew. Like, muda'ut for awareness, toda'a for mind, but that's not clear necessarily. As ani mishtameshet b'mila muda'ut b'shvil awareness, ken sda yedi'a, and v'b'dharma lifamim etargemim. Awareness, לפעמים מתרגמים consciousness, אז בעברית אנחנו לפעמים נגיד מודעות ולפעמים נגיד הכרה, כן? אבל מה שחשוב זה הידיעה של החוויה. כשאנחנו משתמשות במילה תודעה, זה mind, כן? זה הלב תודעה, כן? דרכי הסתכלות שלנו, מצבי הרוח שלנו, מצבי התודעה שלנו, זה יותר הכיוון הזה, המודעות זה ככה, הרובד המעודן יותר של הידיעה והמפגש עם החוויה. את לא נראית כאילו עניתי לך.
זה לא עושה לי איזשהו
אורגזמה של הבנה. אז את רוצה לתת לי דוגמה או חידוד של השאלה? אני, כן, בשביל איך זה אותו דבר?
בשביל זה אותו דבר, זה פשוט שתי מילים שאיכשהו...
אז כן. אז, אז, אז בואי, בואי באמת ניכנס יותר בפירוט. כן, לגמרי יש הבחנה. תודעה זה איפה שיש לנו הרגלים. כן, הרגלים של התפיסה, הרגלים של תשומת הלב, כן, הרגלים של הקשב. כן? למה, למשל, לאן הקשב הולך? זה כמו שאני מבחינה בין תשומת לב ומודעות. כן? שני דברים שונים, זה לא אותו דבר. כן? זאת התודעה. המודעות זה הידיעה, זה, או ההכרה, כן, של, של החוויה. יותר, יותר מעודן. הייתי אומרת יותר מעודן, יותר רחב. כן? זה כמו שדה שהוא, שהוא נגיד, אם, אם עכשיו נקשיב לצלילים, כן? אז הנינגאות הזאת, כן, של הידיעה של הצליל, כן? משהו שיודע את הצליל, כן? תופס את הצליל, יודע את הצליל. כן. כן. מודעות או הכרה.
Can I just say
yeah.
something that may or may not be helpful, but all distinctions collapse in analysis, you know. So when you start looking at this stuff, it can't stand up, you know. It will just fall apart in a way. But is the distinction helpful for the continuation of practice? You know, it's all around this kind of usefulness of things. So if it doesn't feel useful, you don't need to use it. That's always really an important thing. Yeah.
It's a matter of language, and language is a frequency.
It's like pointing, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a map.
Or whatever.
If yeah. I understand, because for me, to the A,
yeah.
consciousness was a higher frequency than awareness.
As consciousness, we don't translate consciousness as to the A. This is consciousness. In Dharma teachings, consciousness and awareness are the same thing, akara or mudaut. בעברית. אז זה פשוט שימוש שונה במילים. הכרה, consciousness ו-awareness זה הכרה או מודעות. כן? כן. ולא תודעה. כן. זה פשוט תרגומים שונים של המילים. יכולים לבלבל. Mind. אנחנו מתרגמים את זה כ-mind. Heart mind. אוקיי. בואו נסיים. כדי שיהיה לנו ולאולם כמה דקות של שקט. ותודה רבה על השאלות, תרגול והקשבה.